Hello and welcome to The Slow Revolution, the podcast where we explore the pros and cons of slowing down in a world obsessed with speed. I'm Carl Honoré, your host, and my guest today is Annabelle Quiroga Rivera. She is the founder of the Slow Reading Club in Notting Hill, which is the first slow reading club in Europe. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to be here. We've just had a slow reading club session, an hour of sitting together in silence and reading. I wonder if you could just describe a little bit the setting, the scene. Where are we? We're in Notting Hill. We're in a shop, but
yes. So we meet once every fortnight at a small shop, a small independent shop just off Portobello Road. And the front of the shop is where you can have buy your coffee and all little knickknacks. And then you step to the back, which is the where you can sit down and have a coffee and toast next to the vinyl player. There is a long sofa to sit on, many other wooden benches. Everybody grabs some toasts and sits down. It feels like a nook that's large enough for about 10, 15 people maximum. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hidden away from street view. So it's quite a nice personal space, I think.
I like that. I like it very much. I like that word nook. I think of it as a bit of a cocoon. You feel like you're almost sealed off from the hurly-burly of London life, and it's quiet, it's soft because you're on cushions, and it's slow, in a sense, isn't it?
It's quite personal, and I think, which is interesting to do with reading, it is a very personal thing to do. You do it on your own, but to come together in what feels like a space that nobody else really knows about makes it quite special.
Tell me about slow reading, because people who are listening will think, well, does that mean reading very, very slowly? Clearly, yes. It doesn't mean that. What is a slow reading club?
So slow reading was something that I heard about over a year ago, which to me sounded like absolute bliss. As a kid, I was a bit of a slow reader myself, and would sit down and read books for hours on end. And I remember my parents would have to beg me to go to the supermarket with them to just drop the book for a little while. And then as I've gotten older, I've read less and less, but not because I don't enjoy it anymore, but because I've got far too many things to do. And it just seemed to me so absurd to be pushing something to a side that made me so happy and that really relaxed me. And kept on trying to fit it in between other things that didn't give me the same level of enjoyment. So when I heard about setting aside an hour for reading and actively switching off all your electronic equipment and just concentrating on reading, it sounded like the perfect solution to me. And it seemed a bit strange to have to have to discipline yourself to sit down for an hour. But I feel like that is something that I needed. And it's really been quite special for me to know that hour, just like I would go to the gym, I now am just going to sit down and read and get lost in a book for an hour.
And at the moment, it's only running every week, no, a monthly, right?
Every other week.
Every other week,
twice a month.
So does that mean you're only reading in that deep, delicious, slow way 2 hours or an hour every couple of weeks? Or has it spilled over into the rest of your life and helped you rediscover that joy of reading?
It's helped me rediscover different types of reading. So I found through other people coming to the Slow Reading Club that they have started to pick books specifically for the slow reading hour. And so I took that advice on board as well and found that slow reading hour has allowed me to appreciate more non-fiction books. So I like to read books that are that explore a subject that I don't know much about. So because it allows me to concentrate more on it for the hour. Or also books that are written in a more poetic manner that I can really engage with the vocabulary and the language and the pace and the rhythm of writing. So that those kind of books I really save for slow reading because you can just enjoy it and the hour flies by. And aside from the slow reading, I just read my fiction, fun, whatever on the best-selling list that I can use for commutes, which are really easy to dip in and out of.
You mentioned other people who come and read here. and the kind of books they're choosing? Are they choosing books that for them are difficult too? So.
Yes, that's what some people are doing. Others have taken the tactic of picking books that have been sitting on their shelves for ages and they never got round to it. Mm-hmm. So that's quite fun. So they're slowly making their way through that. And others are just reading. Some people are part of another book club, so they use the hour to finish off whatever book they need to finish. So it's a real mix. Yeah.
And what kind of people come? Is there a cross-section of London life, or is it one particular demographic group?
I like to think it's quite a mix, and I think that's also because of Portobello. It's such a eclectic community to be part of. So we have web designers, ethical clothes, I don't know, designers or PR people. What else do we have?
I know there was a publisher there this evening who says he's been here every time apart from one week when he was sick.
So. Yes, and he was extremely apologetic on that. And we've got everything from academics to psychologists. So it's a really good mix of people. And ages as well.
And are they coming for the same reasons that you set the club up for in the first place? To have that sacred hour, that space to get away and maybe impose a bit of self-discipline on themselves?
Yes. And a couple of them have told me that on the Tuesdays that I don't run the slow reading, they try and sit down on their own and do a slow reading hour of their own in wherever they are, which I think is really disciplined of them. Mm-hmm.
One thing that sets this club apart from just reading is the fact that it's a communal act, isn't it? That any number of people sit around together in silence for an hour, which is quite an unusual thing nowadays, isn't it? It's hard to imagine another social scenario where we sit and do something in silence together in the same sort of way. Does that change the experience of reading in any way or inform it?
I think it's really strange. This idea of sitting down and reading for an hour can sometimes feel like you should be doing something more productive. You should be producing something. But I think if you're sat there and you look around and you see other people reading as well, you don't feel like that hour has been wasted. You feel like you're part of something, I think. Mm. And I really enjoy coming together with other people. You're not forced to talk if you don't want to. You can just sit there and read. And I think there's this kind of underlying understanding that we are together, but we're not necessarily doing the same thing, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
It does. To me, I've done it twice now, and the atmosphere there feels wonderfully intimate. There's a kind of gentle camaraderie somehow that, as you say, we're all in it together, but we're all doing our own thing, which is a kind of magic to it. And there's a wonderful quote from C.S. Lewis about reading. He says, "We read to know that we are not alone." So that idea of through the text understanding that we share things with other people, but actually there's something lovely about actually sharing the act of reading with others. I like that very much. Has a community sprung up around the club? Do people read and run after the hour is finished, or do they stick around? Have people formed friendships, or have marriages sprung up? You know, what's been the...
Well, you know, I was... when it first started, I was quite unsure what sort of people would be arriving, and I was also quite aware that I didn't want to force friendship on people if they didn't want to talk. But just naturally, after the first couple of sessions, conversation would spring up about what book are you reading, why have you chosen that one, would you recommend it? And through that, and because we see each other regularly, we've started to talk more about who we are. It feels quite strange to meet up month after month and not have any idea who the person next to you is. And I think also the fact that we've all engaged with this idea of slow reading means that we've got ideas in common as well. And yes, we do meet up, some of us afterwards, outside of slow reading, which is so strange because it will usually be in a noisy bar somewhere, very unlike the environment that we're in here right now. So we joke about that a lot.
That you go together from here,
yes,
in your own little cloud,
yes,
of zen.
And then we just get abruptly interrupted by loud music the minute we step out onto Portobello.
That is London, I suppose. Are there particular books that do well in this environment that people then swap back and forth? Or is it
So there's one called, the title's quite confusing, The Peculiar Life of a Lonely Postman. And it's written by Denise Thoreau. And it's a short book written in the form of a haiku. And there are many haikus throughout the entire book. So it's that sort of language, because it's short, it's something that you, it's, I think it's 97 pages, around 100 pages. So it's something very easy to pick up. But also the language is, it's used so sparsely that you can lose yourself in it. Mm-hmm. And what other types of books? Those Oxford study guides, I think, that they're called, that just give you an introduction, a very short introduction to, that's what it's called.
Right.
It's a series that brings up non-fiction items that you can pick up in just half an hour, which is also quite useful.
Let's maybe drill it down into the whole term slow reading, because clearly it doesn't mean, it's not about words read per minute.
No.
It's something bigger and deeper and richer than that. What does it mean to you, that phrase?
Strange enough, I don't feel that my pace of reading slows down when I'm in a slow reading hour. I feel that my engagement and concentration actually deepens during that slow hour. So it could be, depending on the type of book that I read, that it actually quickens, because my memory, my imagination is so active in that hour. It's like I'm watching a movie. And so slow reading really is about just stopping everything else and taking a breather. A lot of people have mentioned that their breathing slows down, their heart rate slows down, and it is just really about relaxing for an hour. That's, I think, what slow reading is.
And giving your full attention to whatever it is you're doing, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Which is what slow is in every context.
It's such a luxury.
Food.
Yes, and I think it is a real luxury for 1 hour to do one thing. We're so used to multitasking constantly. I'm guilty of watching TV and texting at the same time, or on the tube, quickly writing an email and then sending it the minute I've got signal again. So to be able to sit down and do nothing else but read, it's very lucky.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you use the word luxury for that, because in a sense that's what it's starting to feel like, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we are under such a barrage of interruptions and distraction and stimulation that to get that hour, to carve out that hour of quiet, still enjoyment of the moment, it seems almost countercultural, or rebellious.
It's so strange that I've had to create this timetable for reading, because it is something that I enjoy so much. I feel the benefits of it, and yet I have to put time aside for it. So I can't think of any other activity that I'm not multitasking. Even when you go to the gym, you're looking for that perfect exercise that will work more than one muscle group, so.
Mm-hmm. And you're probably listening to music or something
exactly.
At the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah. What do you do as a career? And has slow reading percolated into the way you work?
I think I'm quite lucky. So I work in the charitable sector, and I work with young people between the ages of 16 and 18, who are trying to decide what to do with their lives in the future. And it's quite interesting to talk to young people, because they're looking for quality of life over money, a lot of them, despite the communities that we work in having quite low socioeconomic factors. So, and I feel that my job allows me this luxury of sitting for an hour and reading a book and creating a community around that. Slow reading, to start a slow reading club, you need a little bit of help. It's not just yourself. So I was very lucky to talk to peddlers in Notting Hill who were happy to allow us to use their space to host it and create a little mailing list and things like that. So it does take a little bit of time. And my job allows me to do that, and I think it's helped me as well with the sort of advice that I give to young people, and it is finding those things that are enjoyable and make something out of that.
Before we sat down here, I was looking through the internet inevitably for quotes on reading, and I came across a few from some of the big names through history, and it does remind you of how important, how transcendent the act of reading is. So simple, but so human. And I'm just going to read a couple of them here. Oscar Wilde: it is what you read when you don't have to that determines what you will be when you can't help it. Or Thomas Aquinas: beware of the person of one book, which is very apposite in this time of religious fanaticism.
Yeah.
A.C. Grayling, to read is to fly. It is to soar to a point of vantage which gives a view over wide terrains of history, human variety, ideas, shared experience, and the fruits of many inquiries. Or Anthony Trollope, the habit of reading is the only enjoyment in which there is no alloy. It lasts when all other pleasures fade.
Yeah.
Confucius, even, going over to the Chinese world, no matter how busy you may think you are, you must find time for reading or surrender yourself to self-chosen ignorance. So even back then, long before Snapchat and chat forums, you know, people were still complaining they couldn't find time to read, clearly. Flaubert, read in order to live. Harry S. Truman, American president, not all readers are leaders, but all leaders are readers.
Yeah,
and then Somerset Maugham, lastly, to acquire the habit of reading is to construct for yourself a refuge from almost all the miseries of life. And it's a nice word, that refuge, because it does really describe the atmosphere here. It does feel like a refuge because we're off, you know, we're in the heart, the throbbing heart of Notting Hill.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on, people coming from around the world for that kind of funky edge. And you step in here and it is a little oasis of calm and quiet, yeah, and stillness. And
I wish I'd thought of that word, refuge, because I think you're right, it does encapsulate what we do really well. And what Confucius said as well, it seemed like madness to me to have to push aside for so long something that I enjoyed so much, like reading. And any other activity that you seem to want to fit around other tasks that are more productive, it just doesn't seem the right way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, starting the Slow Reading Club has made me look into other factors in my life as well, and not just with reading. Cooking.
You mean bringing the slow lens to bear elsewhere?
Yes, because it's made me realize sometimes I just need to go back to basics to be happier. Replacing small tasks such as reading with WhatsApping and Snapchatting, it didn't bring the same level of happiness,
no.
Really. No. If anything, it caused more stress.
Yeah. It's funny, I've gone through a similar trajectory as you have, where I was a very avid reader as a child and into my early 20s, and then somehow it just seemed to fall by the wayside. Mm-hmm. And I became that person who was always saying at parties or in the pub to friends, oh, I never have time to read. And you think, well, I've still got 24 hours every day.
Yeah.
And if you stop and look at what those hours are being spent on, you begin to ask the bigger questions, such as what really matters. Who am I? What am I going to look back on 30 years from now and regard as important? You know, and so many of the things that I was frittering away my time on, just I was able to let them go. And suddenly I've gone back to being someone who reads every night. You know, I get through novels one after the other, and it's just a joy. You know, it's a coming home in a way, and it's hasn't cost me anything. In fact, it's probably saved me money,
yeah,
you know, in some ways. So.
But don't get me wrong, I'm still in my 20s. I live in London. I love going out, and I still enjoy dancing the night away and things. So, but I feel it is compatible with that, and it is just knowing when to slow down and when to pick the pace up again. It doesn't mean that my entire life now I just do one task at a time. Mm. But I think I live such a high-paced life that to exchange it from time to time with something like slow reading has helped me, definitely.
Gives you a kind of equilibrium. It's
balance.
That changing gears, isn't it, between the fast and the slow, whatever age you are, whether in your 20s, 30s, or beyond. Certainly, I don't think of reading as being something that one does in a rocking chair as you're heading towards retirement and the sunset years. So I think it's there for everyone.
Yes.
And certainly, I've got a lot of fast in my life, and I love my fast moments.
Yeah.
And I will juggle several things at the same time, but if it makes sense to. But.
And I actually feel more in control, strangely, because I've decided I'm going to take this hour and I'm just going to read. And at this precise moment, that is all that matters. And to be able to have that control and discipline over something where you don't feel like you are having to answer to other people or emails or there's a TV show you want to watch or you have to go out, that is pretty empowering as well.
Mm-hmm. The way you describe it, it almost sounds like the way people talk about yoga.
Yes. I guess so, definitely.
Out. Now, the person who launched the idea of slow reading clubs was in New Zealand, right?
Yeah, she is.
So you've planted the flag first here in London. What's happened since then? Have other parts of London, other cities in Europe picked it up and run with it?
Yes, so Meg in New Zealand, it's her article that I read. over a year ago. And I know that other clubs have started, but not in London. I know other people have been interested in doing it, have come along to see it, but they haven't started anything. There's a couple in Japan that I know of, and a few in the US, but I don't know of any others around Europe. I'd be very...
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think that some cultures are more inclined to read than others?
I don't know. I mean, my family are Bolivian, South American, and I come from a family that reads a lot over there as well, so I'm not entirely sure if it's a cultural thing.
Or a family-by-family, person-by-person thing?
It could be, maybe.
It's interesting that no one else has picked up the baton here in London or in Europe. You'd think Europe is, in some ways, the seat of... It's where publishing was invented.
Yes. You know,
there are a lot of bookish cities and bookish people around.
I find that a lot of people who've mentioned they wanted to start one in London will come along and have a look and see how easy it is. Anybody can do it anywhere, really. It doesn't have a high startup cost or anything. But I don't know why they don't take it up. I think what does scare some people is maybe the commitment. You have to commit yourself to, in my case, twice a month. Which at the beginning I was hesitant to do, but then I realised this is actually something I want to do myself anyway. So if anything, I am now definitely saying I am going to take 2 hours a month to read.
Commitment's an interesting thing to bring up, because people do seem to be commitment phobic nowadays, don't they? Because there's just so much on offer. Mm. You don't want to lock yourself in because you might have to turn something down. You'll FOMO, fear of missing out and all of that.
Yes.
Maybe that's standing between people and
even
setting it up.
I bring up the gym constantly, but even gyms give you the 1 month membership or pay as you go. And I think there's this whole thing of wanting to be able to switch and switch when you want to. Which I think is great. I think it's wonderful that you can go out and explore different things. But in my case, I need this and I enjoy it. So I'm all right with committing to it.
And publishers haven't shown an interest to be a good place to put writers and talks and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Publishers have mentioned about maybe bringing some of their books in and seeing if our readers... If our members would like to read them, but it just doesn't seem it hasn't been something that I've picked up, because I feel I enjoy the liberty that our members have to read what it is they want and also create that community and exchanging books within our small membership, but it's not something that cannot be explored.
The only other example I've seen of something similar was in a school in South London, secondary school, which I was visiting to see if my son might go there. And the thing that really charmed me was that the headmaster said that every day for, I think it was 20 minutes, the whole school just down tools, wherever they were, and everybody picked up a book and read. And he himself would go sit down in the hallway in the middle of where the doors were coming in from the playground and read a book, whatever novel he was reading. And I just loved that idea of saying, this is more important than anything else for this 20 minutes. We're just going to stop, we're going to focus, we're going to read, and then we'll pick up our tools again and carry on. And it just seemed like a wonderful metaphor for how to think about life, but it also fits in nicely with what you're doing here.
That's great. I remember in primary school we had reading time, and you could read whatever it is that you wanted. And I thought that was quite exciting, where the library would be open and you could pick any book you wanted. So that was quite exciting. And also just to look around and see what everybody else was doing. Mm. And the silence that comes out of it. I mean, our classroom was always noisy. But for those 20 minutes, or I think half an hour, it was silent.
A delicious silence reigns. Do you find that in the slow reading club here, that people are sneaking a glance at other people reading and getting book envy?
A couple of times I've looked around and go, oh, I've wanted to read that. I think maybe up to the third time that I've done this club, I would notice the silence. The silence was very loud for me. And we used to have music in the background, but then I'd become very aware of the music, and is it too loud, or is it the right type of music? I didn't want it to distract from people's books. And now, it doesn't exist anymore. It's background. And I think my brain's just trained for that 1 hour to focus on the books. Mm-hmm. I think our biggest distraction in the hour is the yummy toast that we get.
Yeah, but that's the best kind of distraction, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder where it all goes from here then. I mean, you've committed yourself, to use your word, to doing this every couple of weeks. Is there a next step for you? I mean, I love the idea of, I was thinking about it on the way in this evening, how could this be pushed out and made more available to people? And I wondered about maybe a flash reading mob, you know, suddenly just appearing, 50 people appearing with a book and sitting down and reading it for 5 minutes in Waterloo Station or something. Just as a way to, you know, just to drop that little
to expand the idea to more people.
Yeah, into a conversation. And of course, that would be very visual and you'd get lots of people talking. And
I hadn't thought of that. I think it would be exciting to get more people on board. And it's very strange, but I'm leaving West London in a couple of weeks and I'm moving east. So I've got an idea of opening another slow reading club in East London. And continue the one in Notting Hill. So I'll be getting, hopefully, 4 hours of slow reading a month and not just the two. And for me, it's also a way of getting to meet local independent shops and the people in the neighbourhood. So it will be my introduction to the community, I hope. Yeah. So.
Well, West London's loss is East London's gain in this case, I would say. Right, well, I think we're at the end here, unless you've got anything else you want to throw into the mix or...
No, I hope that anybody who listens to this podcast decides to take on the baton and start their own slow reading club somewhere and to get in touch, because it'd be great to build a community online.
Is there somewhere people can go? Do you have a website or an email address if
yes,
they want
there
tips
is,
or encouragement?
Slowreading.co, and that is where the slow reading community internationally is. Or you can reach me at my email address, which is slowreading.nottinghill@gmail.com.
Perfect. And I'll put that up on my website so people can read it as well as having heard it from you.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure, and I'll look forward to reading with you again soon.
thank
Thanks,
you.
Annabelle.
Bye.